Song. I'm gonna play two. So I've been working on a new record for like a month or two. Before that, I was working as an art handler for a really long time, which is a tough job. And several of the people that I worked with, I worked like driving around on a truck. And several of the people I worked with had vape pens, and they would just be honking it all day. So I felt inspired to write a tune.
They say Michelle turned in her BFA for CDL. Now she drives that box truck 50 hours a week. She don't paint anymore. She misses it for sure, but who's got the time? And that day she got her money sure was sweet. Just give up, but she's not the type to want, so she just follows those white lines and keeps her mouth shut. But when no one is around, she sneaks a little puff, and that's enough. She's vaping on the job, spice it up and cool it down. Forget her name, forget her place, forget this game, forget this race, forget this town. Forget the nightmares in the news, forget these old computer blues. Forget the dream she used to dream that she forgot. Oh, forget the boss she's vaping on the job. While Michelle drives a truck, Danny rides a desk chair up in Midtown. It's one of those odd jobs that ain't really odd at all. He takes his lunch alone while the higher-ups play ping-pong in the background. Can't remember when he ever felt this small. Because the screenplay that he wrote ain't causing the commotion that he hoped. Feels like every day is the same old joke. Danny's found a special way to cope. When he sneaks out to the stairs and puts that pen up to his lips and gives it a kiss. He's vaping on the job. Spice it up and cool it down. Forget his pain, forget his place. Forget this game, forget this race. Forget this town. Forget the nightmares in the news. Forget these old computer blues. Forget the dreams he used to dream meets Michelle at a bar in Queens where Dina is the barkeep. She pours them both the water and the beer. Dina, what a week it's been, says Danny as Michelle draws on her napkin. Dina fakes a smile and pretends to care. Because her spirit's on the bottom shelf, and in her heart she's carrying a stone. Since the person that she thought she maybe could have loved turned out to be a ghost. So she gets out for some air. Danny and Michelle know where she's gone. She's vaping on the job. Spice it up and cool it down. Forget her pain, forget her place. Forget this game, forget this race. Forget this town. Forget the nightmares in the news. Forget these old computer blues. Forget the dream she used to dream that she forgot. Oh, forget the boss she's vaping on the job. Oh, forget the boss she's vaping on the job. Thanks. I'm going to do another older tune.
Is this good? Is this the reverb?
There's tons of fucking reverb on my voice.
Man, I wish I talked like this all the time.
When the light is on, the reverb is off.
I can't remember that shit, man. Don't tell me that. I really love that new song.
Hey, thanks.
I feel like one of my favorite... I
worked really hard on it.
I know. I heard a lot of versions of it. I feel like the best part of shitty jobs is just like the tiny things you do when you're trying to avoid having to actually work.
Totally.
Yeah.
Play a lot of online chess.
Really? Like on your phone?
Yes.
Do you ever win? I never beat the fucking computer.
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
I had this one job where I used to keep like a bag of Halloween candy in a filing cabinet. And if I was ever having a really bad day, I'd be like, hold on, you gotta get something. And I would just like nibble on fucking Butterfingers huddled over a filing cabinet. Nice. It was pretty sick. We have a really good show. Thank you all for coming. We have Johanna, who's about to play, not about to, but at the end of the night, going to be playing some new songs off an album coming out in 2019, next year. But first, we have Brandon Stosi. He is a former editor at Pitchfork, and he currently curates at Basilica Hudson, a festival in the fall in Hudson, New York, and the Tinnitus series in New York City. You probably know Brandon, if you do know him, because he is the editor-in-chief and co-founder of The Creative Independent, which is a blog which is kind of like transforming into this really great database of resources for artists where you can search by an artist and read an interview of them, kind of discussing the creative process and what it takes to go through it all. Or you can look through topics like political engagement or adversity or time management. And it has what is, in my opinion, probably like the best, most holistic take on what it takes to practically be an artist and
agreed
fit what it takes to be an artist in your life. I feel like how much time do you spend a day thinking about your work?
Can I have to go with it depends on that one?
Oh, well, fuck it. Everyone, please welcome Brandon to the stage. So the first thing I'm curious about is you spent the majority of your career as a journalist, as a critic.
Right.
And now a lot of what you do explores the logistics behind making art. When did your interest shift?
The interest was always there, but it ties in with this sort of topic of jobs where I'd gone to grad school for literature. I was studying Kathy Acker, and I ended up writing my grad stuff on Dennis Cooper, this writer Dennis Cooper, and I was working as in a rare books room at NYU. And I just started, it was in the early days of Pitchfork, and I just started kind of doing stuff there. It was like one of the first early, writers there many, many years ago. And as Pitchfork grew, it just became a thing that became my job. So I went from this path of like writing a novel and thinking I'm going to be this person and really into books, into being a music writer. We're kind of talking about it before where I never really fit the mindset of a music writer, where if someone didn't like something I liked, it didn't bother me. And if someone, was mad at a review I wrote, I'd say, oh, I can see your side of things. So I was never really a person I cared that much in that way. I just liked music and wanted to express things I was into. So with The Creative Independent, it kind of bounced back out with what I'd initially been into. And before I worked at Pitchfork, I'd lived in Canada for a couple of years, and I worked at an art gallery, and I was installing art and had made a film and was doing a lot of different things. And yeah, that move, just from focusing entirely on music for so long, it was nice to step back. And also, we don't do reviews on the site I have now, so we don't have to, we're not judging people's work, we're just kind of talking about their work, which has been a nice shift.
Yeah, one of the things that I really like about The Creative Independent is it exists entirely almost outside of press cycles.
Yeah.
I don't mean this in a negative way, but like relevancy, like it is entirely dictated by who is interesting and what do they have to say. On your website, the description is that it is a resource of both like practical and emotional matters. Mm-hmm. In your position as editor, you're kind of overseeing all of these truly impressive artists talking about what they have to go through to make their art. And I really enjoy that you kind of like delineate it between like there's practical issues and there's emotional issues. From both angles, what do you think is the biggest obstacle facing people nowadays?
I think something I realized this week we're focusing on people finding the time to work, and that's really resonated with people. And early on, we were kind of focusing on, you know, creative blocks or adversity in that kind of sense, but we realized more and more it's just finding the time to do things. And I think there's so many like sort of digital distractions now and so many distractions in general, and just finding the focus to kind of keep doing stuff. We interviewed my friend Zach Barron today, who I used to work with at Pitchfork, and now he's GQ's staff writer, like their one staff writer. And one of the things he talked about was a friend of his has published all these books, and he said, yeah, the only difference between me and the people in the coffee shop also working on books is that I just decided to finish the books and kind of force myself to finish these things. Like, if you have an idea, following it through to the end is often the toughest thing. I think a lot of people we talk to will say, yeah, I started something, there was a lag, I didn't finish it, I moved on to something else.
You know, a lot of people write into it. Mostly for practical or emotional issues, though?
I think it's often practical. I mean, it's complicated. It's kind of like he was saying, it's both practical and emotional. Maybe at first it's practical, then it becomes emotional. Even, you know, I was talking to Hunter, who's out there, before this started. I was saying, this morning I got up at 5 to work on a book that I'm doing, and then, like, deal with taking the dog for a walk, then go to the office, work all day, come home. It's sort of, I think it never really stops. I think that's the thing to keep in mind. Like, even if you're having some level of success, you're kind of always still pushing and still having to create constantly. Like, it's not like you finish one thing and then you just sit on it the rest of your life. You know,
there's this really good article you have on your website that is a guide to making art when you have a full-time job.
Yeah.
And the best thing about that is just the assumption that art isn't, or doesn't necessarily have to be, your job. I feel like a lot of the point of view that the creative independent gets across is that art isn't necessarily a careerist thing.
Right.
You talk to a lot of people to which art is, at least to some degree, their career, if not entirely their degree. Like, you've had friends of mine who I know for a fact what their day job is, but you also have, like, Philip Glass in it. Why do you do it that way?
Well, I think, I mean, I've been thinking about this recently because for me, you know, I've had a job since I was 13. Like, I grew up in the Pine Barrens. I worked on a blueberry farm.
Like a Sopranos.
It's a very good job. I mean, it was a shitty job, but what was good about it was you only got paid by how much you picked. Yeah. So it forced you to always...
Do you remember the rate still?
Oh, yeah. It was like a mile from my house.
No, the rate.
Like, oh, the rate. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like 10 cents a pound.
Sick.
Yeah.
Ooh, no, not sick. That's bad.
It's terrible. Yeah. But, I mean, I was 13, so it didn't seem so bad. But I think like that kind of mindset of always doing something has filtered in. And recently, like, I took a week off from the Creative Independent to work on some other projects, but I had to create these false things. I mean, like, my friend Yossi was in town. I'm like, hey, let's meet for coffee. I had to kind of create these things every day because I'm not used to having unlimited time. And I think many people work that way. Like, they need to have something. And we just interviewed Silent Servant. We didn't run it yet, but he talked about how, like, he quit his job to focus on music entirely and found that it didn't work for him. So he went back to his job. I think some people need to have that balance and that struggle. And for me, I mean, with the Creative Independent, like you were saying, we don't have, it's supposed to be evergreen content. So we're not trying to, like, tie it to news cycles, which is great. Like, you know, we'll interview Angel Olsen and everyone's running their Angel Olsen pieces, and we'll wait like 8 months, then we'll run ours, and it's on a different topic. And so I think along that line, we're interviewing people who are huge, but also people who are small, people who are like just starting out, people who are successful. Like, we'll have, you know, Laurie Anderson one day and Hilton Alls one day, and then the next day someone who is just starting. And I think it's always one thing a day, if not maybe two, if it's just like pairing two people who make sense. But the idea too is that they're all treated on the same level. So if we have Bjork one day, it's going to be the same exact approach as the next day we have like some experimental poet who's working on their first book that you never heard of. And the idea to me was just like everyone's creative, everyone's working on something, and it should all be this sort of equal line of delineation.
I feel this tension a lot in my own personal attitudes towards a lot of art, whereas I think anyone can benefit from viewing some facet of their life like art.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that making art is work and it's labor and you deserve to get paid fairly for it. But that isn't necessarily to say that I think everyone should be a career artist. And I never like really know the balance between those two things.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I'm curious what your opinion about it is what do you think the, like, what do you get from being an artist on nights and weekends? Like, other than you enjoy it, but like, what benefit is it? Like, should more people do that? Should fewer people do it? Like, what's it add to your life?
I mean, Kafka had a day job, you know, it's like, you make something.
He also hated that day job.
Yeah, I mean, most people do, but.
Gave him tuberculosis and he died.
Yeah, but he still.
He also hated writing, so.
Yeah, and he wanted all this stuff burned, so yeah. Things don't always work out as
planned.
And
his motherfucking best friend sold him out.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. It's like the Tupac of our times.
Yeah.
But I think that, of the past times. But I think that you get a satisfaction out of making something. I mean, I thought about that myself. I'm like, why the hell am I jumping into this other thing when everything's already so chaotic? And then you're like, oh, but it's fun to finish something and to get it done, move on to the next thing. And I think also we interviewed Jordan from Mutual Benefit the other day. Yeah. And he wrote an essay, actually. It was an interview about community. One thing I thought that stood out was this idea of like making culture versus consuming it.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people just like to make stuff. And so it's satisfying to make it. For me, I'd rather make something than just like sit down and like binge watch a show or something. Or I want to read, which feels more active to me. You know, I think it's just something satisfying about getting something done.
Well, you're somebody who you curate, but you're probably more known for your discussions of other people's work.
Mm-hmm.
And even the way you edit yourself in a lot of these interviews, you'll sometimes remove yourself entirely. You don't really like push a lot of your like personality forward a lot. Mm-hmm. Like you're in many ways kind of like faceless in a lot of the work you do. I mean, like if somebody's been to like a festival you've curated, they can get a sense of what your tastes are,
right?
But like I couldn't do an impersonation of you.
Yeah, I mean my bio photo on the site is a black box. I mean, yeah. I think that for me it's like when I was at Pitchfork, I got a lot out of my system of sort of like writing with more about yourself, and here it's been fun to make myself more anonymous when I can, especially in a culture where everyone has branded themselves in a way. It's kind of nice to just step back and be like, oh, here's this interview with Eileen Miles. I don't need to exist here. She was able to talk without me. Like, I'm going to remove myself and just let it be about them versus me.
Well, the reason I bring that up is I want to ask, you do write, like, your own stuff. You have put out books, and you just alluded to the fact that you're working on something and you're making something. Do you view the art you curate, the festivals you curate, the interviews you do, the website you edit, like, is this all part of, like, a creative vision? Like, is this a creative project for you? Like, how do you do it? Are you, like, is this all you facilitating, or is it you facilitating and making?
I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff I curate was kind of, the shows I did were kind of born out of this idea. Me and the artist Matthew Barney have been doing shows for 10 years in, like, a warehouse in Long Island City, which is about to be knocked down by Amazon.
Oh, great.
So we've been, like, doing these shows. And a lot of the stuff we would do there, we could get away with a lot because it was a space that wasn't public necessarily. So we had a bull, like a live bull with a black metal band. And we had...
like a cow?
Yeah, like an actual bull.
What
did
it... you know what? Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually a failed experiment. But
I don't want to know.
And we've had, you know, and we had like Collier Shore choreographed a wrestling match for us.
Oh, who wrestled?
It was two amateur wrestlers. Uh-huh. So it was not like Hulk Hogan or something. Anonymous. But a lot of these like shows were mixing like music, and with that one, like Carla Scafani and Mark McCoy both DJed noise at the same time during that. So we're always trying to mix like noise, art, performance, and also kind of keep it sort of lighthearted. We had one where we had like a porta potty we'd put on hydraulics that nobody knew about, and just like, you know, things like that. Like, kind
I don't
of
like that. I'm sorry.
just kind of like that at all. Just trying to keep it somewhat, you know, It's funny, like someone mentioned Tony Conrad today, who when I was in grad school was like my mentor, right? Was my teacher. Yeah, and one thing he taught me was like to never take yourself too seriously, like to do serious work, but not to be some kind of like ponderous dude who's just like, yeah, I'm so important. Where like everyone's time is equal, like everyone's time is as valuable as the next person's, and everyone's work, I think. And these shows were kind of like, let's level the playing ground to do these weird shows, but that kind of feel like they're not like, hey, let's just book three bands at Music Hall Williamsburg. It's like a different kind of thing. And I tried to carry that into like the stuff I do at the Broad Museum or at these other venues, to keep them kind of weird and holistic and unexpected. So it's like, hey, let's have like Flucht in like the first floor of the Broad Museum while this other thing's happening upstairs, and the sound of the noise from there is going there. And so it is like this thought of how to do it in this kind of, I see it as curating, but we are trying to make something with it. So it's not just like, let's just choose these three things. We're very carefully.
All the things
like,
you do to you, is it part of the same?
Yeah, it's all part of the same thing for sure. Yeah. And even like the books that are happening now are kind of, they're all somewhat related. Like one is Matthew and I doing a book about the space now that's getting knocked down. One is about crying in public, which is somewhat similar, but different.
I'd sooner die.
Yeah. And yeah, but they all kind of fit this kind of concept of one is about curating your life and kind of finding ways to eke out an existence. Like having grown up in a working class town where it wasn't even expected I'd go to college necessarily, let alone like make art or curate stuff. Just sort of making decisions when you're young to be like, I want to try to do this, I want to try to do that. And making those decisions and being able to kind of make it happen slowly over time. And working all the weird jobs.
Yeah. I have a similar background. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was like 18, my dad asked me what I want to do. And I didn't really know what it was called, but I described it to him. And he just like looked at me and he's like, why? I also don't know the answer to that anymore. Yeah. I still don't know.
Yeah, my dad now like retroactively is like, yeah, this is great. But at the time when I was 17, I was like, Dad, I'm going to do a festival in the backyard. And I put on a festival and we had like 1,000 people come. And he was like,
"Where did they go to the bathroom?"
Terrible. We had porta potties. They weren't on hydraulics though. But that was one of the things I learned was that we kind of
that's where porta potties need to be.
I screwed it up. I mean, I rented only 2 porta potties. I needed more, and it was sort of a disaster. But yeah, I mean, I started like just putting hardcore shows on, and when I was a teenager, and then doing those shows. But my dad at the time was like, "This is why are you doing this?" But now he looks back and is like, "Yeah, this is great. It led to something else." But at the time, it was just I lived in a town with no venues. So if you have no venues, you have to make your own. Because I couldn't drive, so I couldn't get to Philadelphia.
Well, I still can't drive. And I live in one of those towns. It sucks. Last thing I want to ask you. Mm-hmm. In as, like, succinctly as you can put it, I kind of want to ask you an obvious question, but in a different context. I feel like a lot of times people will ask someone in your position, like, what advice would you give an up-and-coming mm-hmm. artist? I want to ask you the same question, but I want to remove the assumption that this person wants to do it for a living.
Right.
And they just want it to be, like, another thing on, like, the shelf of their life.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I was thinking this earlier, well, two different things. Like, one, like, just do stuff you like to do and find people you can do it with, unless you want to do it by yourself. But I also think, like, going back to the blueberry picking, like, one thing that's carried through to me is just kind of having, like, don't be casual about the work you do. Even if you're not trying to be, like, some ponderous, like, over-pretentious person, you should still treat the work seriously and don't treat it casually. Like, try to make it work. Even if, like you were saying, you're getting up at 4 a.m. and guzzling your coffee and writing, like, treat those moments very seriously. And if even doesn't lead to anything, at least, like, years later, you have a story to tell at your podcast.
Cool. Great. Well, thanks for coming.
Sure.
Doug, you want to play another song?
He's got it. Yeah. There we go.
I forgot what's on it. Oh. This is November is the month. Joni Mitchell was born. Have you heard of her? So I'm going to play one of her songs. It's popularized by Judy Collins, another fave. Mm-hmm. bows and flows of angel hair, ice cream castles in the air, feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way. Now they only block the sun. They rain snow on everyone. So many things I would have done. Clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds. Dizzy dancing way you feel when all your fairy tales come real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. Leave them laughing when you go, and if you care, don't let it show. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. Really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud. Say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way. Now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed. Something's lost and something's gained. I'm living every day. I've looked at from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. Joni Mitchell song called Both Sides Now. It's a cute song.
Okay, I'm going to do one more. That's mine. And then Johan is going to come up and play.
Yep.
My love, she said, we go on trip before we're old. I told the truth, I'll follow you any place you go. And when I stood to pack my stuff, she sat my ass back down. Said I was hers and she was mine forever starting now. Took two tabs out of her bag and put them in our mouths. Are we here? Did we disappear? She said to me. We're fine, was my reply, though I could hardly breathe. And through the ceilings I saw us tangled on the ground. Dreams all intertwined with lies we told, lies we'd found. She told me, honey, all is one, my blood ran cold with doubt. Cause it's not easy, truth. tripping with the one you love, when every little feeling that you feel is half as real, twice as real, and every word you say just goes away.
I thought that Jenny from Forrest Gump was based on Joni Mitchell, and nobody cleared this up for me until I was like 25.
Where'd you get that from?
She it's likes like Joni. Yeah, I know. She likes Joni Mitchell in the like. There's that scene where she plays guitar and she mentions that she likes Joni Mitchell.
You thought that they that. What did you think that they were the same?
No, I didn't think that they were the same. Although I did. Confuse Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, and Rick Springfield for a really long time.
Well, that's totally fair.
No, I didn't think that they were the same. I, for some reason, I thought Forrest Gump was based on real people, and I thought that Jenny was based on Joni Mitchell.
But wasn't there a guy? There was a guy, though, who ran across the country.
Yeah, that's not who I thought Forrest Gump was. thank you all for coming. This has been a really great show. We're going to be back here on December 17th with Neon Masharov and Eyes of Love. We're going to be talking about being tough and big and strong. Our next guest is playing at Alphaville on December 15th. She has an album out in 2019, Mirroring. Do you know when that's coming out yet? It's coming out sometime in the next 12 and a half months. Everyone, please welcome Johanna.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you, Dougie Poole, for letting me use your guitar and for your beautiful songs. How could my heart pay you when I learned to trust? I love instantly grant the truth. You're the one I couldn't stand to lose. And knowing you, just knowing you. Thank you. with me and what I do, you may have never seen me playing a guitar before. it's not my primary instrument, but I wrote all of the songs for this next record on guitar, and I wanted to share them with you the way I wrote them tonight. And I'm so honored to have one of my oldest friends and music collaborators here with me, Adeline Stry.
I'm so honored.
all the way from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So cowardly, and that's why you always leave with another broken piece. Does it feel like security? Feel like security?
To cut someone out of your life. Ow. You just gotta do it sometimes.
To me too.
see me playing synth with a full band. Someone else will play guitar. Alphaville, December 15th. Should be a really nice evening. Also, we're playing in this arrangement December 8th, supporting mutual benefit at Park Church Co-op as well. My name is Johanna Swanson. This project is a sort of phonetic spelling. My name, Johanna, Y-O-H-U-N-A. And you can Google that and find me on all of the things. Oh, yeah.